This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Crank Palace by James Dashner, narrated by Mark Deakins. Part 1. Welcome to the Neighborhood. Chapter 1. There they go. Newt looked through the grimy glass of the Berg's porthole, watching as his friends walked toward the massive, imposing gate that barred one of the few passages into Denver. A formidable wall of cement and steel surrounded the city's battered but not broken skyscrapers, with only a few checkpoints such as the one Newt's friends were about to use. Attempt to use. Looking up at the gray walls and the iron-colored bolts and seams and hinges of the reinforcements on the doors, it would be impossible not to think of the maze, where the madness had all begun. Quite literally. His friends. Thomas. Minho. Brenda. Jorge. Newt had felt a lot of pain in his life, both inside and out, but he believed that very moment, watching Tommy and the others leave him for the last time, was his new rock bottom. He closed his eyes, the sorrow bearing on his heart like the weight of 10 grievers. Tears leaked out of his squeezed eyelids, ran down his face. His breath came in short, stuttered gasps. His chest hurt with the pain of it. A part of him desperately wanted to change his mind, accept the reckless whims of love and friendship, and open the Berg's slanting hatch door, sprint down its rickety frame, join his friends in their quest to find Hans, get their implants removed, and accept whatever came next. But he'd made up his mind, as fragile as it might be. If ever in his life he could do one thing right, the thing that was unselfish and full of good, this was it. He'd spare the people of Denver his disease, and he'd spare his friends the agony of watching him succumb to it. His disease. The flare. He hated it. He hated the people trying to find a cure. He hated that he wasn't immune, and he hated that his best friends were. All of it conflicted, battled, raged inside him. He knew that he was slowly going insane, a fate rarely escaped when it came to the virus. It had come to a point where he didn't know if he could trust himself, both his thoughts and his feelings. Such an awful circumstance could drive a person mad if they weren't already well on their way to that lonely destination. But while he knew that he still had an ounce of sense, he needed to act. He needed to move before all those heavy thoughts ended him even sooner than the flare. He opened his eyes, wiped his tears. Tommy and the others had already made it through the checkpoint. They'd entered the testing area, anyway. What happened after that was cut from Newt's view with the closing of a gate, the final puncture in his withering heart. He turned his back to the window, pulled in several deep breaths, trying to dampen the anxiety that threatened him like a 30-meter wave. "I can do this," he thought. "For them." He got to his feet, ran to the bunk he'd used on the flight from Alaska. He had almost no possessions in this world, but what little he owned he threw into a backpack, including some water and food and a knife he'd stolen from Thomas to remember him by. Then he grabbed the most important item, a journal and pen he'd found in one of the random cabinets on the Berg. It had been blank when he'd discovered the compact book, though a little tattered and worn, its endless white pages flipping by like the rattled wings of a bird when he thumbed through it. Some former lost soul flying to who knows where on this bucket of metal had once thought to write down the story of their life, but chickened out. Or died. Newt had decided on the spot to write his own story, keep it a secret from everyone else. For himself, maybe someday for others. The long blast of a horn sounded from outside the walls of the ship, making Newt flinch and throw himself onto the bed. His heart sputtered out a few rapid beats while he tried to reorient. The flare made him jumpy, made him quick to anger, made him a sodden mess in every way. And it was only going to get worse. In fact, it seemed like the bloody thing was working overtime on his poor little brain. Stupid virus. He wished it was a person so he could kick its arse. The noise stopped after a few seconds, followed by a silence still as darkness. Only in that silence did Newt realize that before the horn there'd been the ambient noise of people outside, erratic and off. Cranks. They must be everywhere outside the walls of the city, those past the gone, trying to get inside for no other reason than the madness that told them to do it, desperate for food, like the primal animals they'd become. What he would become. But he had a plan, didn't he? Several plans, depending on the contingencies. But each plan had the same ending. It was just a matter of how he got there. He would last for as long as he needed to write what he needed in that journal. Something about that simple, empty little book waiting to be filled. It had given him a purpose, a spark, a winding course to ensure the last days of his life had reason and meaning. A mark left on the world. He would write all the sanity he could muster out of his head before it was taken over by its opposite. He didn't know what the horn had been or who had blown it or why it was suddenly quiet outside. He didn't want to know. But perhaps a path had been cleared for him. The only item left to settle was how to leave it with Thomas and the others. Maybe give them a little closure. He'd already written one depressing note to Tommy. Might as well write another. Newt decided that his journal would survive if it weighed less by one page. He tore it out and sat down to write a message. Pen was almost to paper when he stalled, as if he'd had the perfect thing to say, but it floated out of his mind like vanished smoke. Sighing, he itched with irritation. Anxious to get out of that burg, walk away, limp or no limp, before something changed. He scribbled down a few lines, the first things that popped in his head.
They got inside somehow. They're taking me to live with the other cranks. It's for the best. Thanks for being my friends. Goodbye.
It wasn't totally true, but he thought about those horns and all that commotion he'd heard outside the burg and figured it was close. Was it short and curt enough to prevent them from coming after him? To get it through their thick skulls that there was no hope for him and that he'd only get in the way? That he didn't want them to watch him turn into a mad, raving, cannibalistic former human? Didn't matter. Didn't matter at all. He was going one way or another. To give his friends the best shot they had at succeeding, with one less obstacle. One less Newt. Chapter 2. The streets were chaos, a mass of disorder shaken up like dice and spilled across the land. But that wasn't the scary part. The scary part was how normal everything felt, as if the world had been arcing toward this moment since the day its rocky surface first cooled and the oceans ceased to boil. Remnants of suburbs lay in scattered, trashy ruin. Buildings and homes with broken windows and peeled paint. Garbage everywhere, strewn about like the tattered pieces of a shattered sky. Crumpled, filthy, fire-scorched vehicles of all sorts. Vegetation and trees growing in places never meant for them. And worst of all, cranks ambling about the streets and yards and driveways as if merchants were about to begin a massive winter market. "All items half price!" Newt's old injury was acting up, making his limp worse than usual. He stumbled to the corner of a street and sat down heavily, leaned against a fallen pole whose original purpose would forever remain a mystery. In the oddest, most random of occurrences, the words "winter market" had rattled him. He didn't understand fully why. Even though his memory had been wiped long ago, it had always been a strange thing. He and the others recalled countless things about the world that they'd never seen or experienced. Airplanes, football, kings and queens, the telly. The swipe had been more like a tiny machine that burrowed its way through their brains and snipped out the specific memories that made them who they were. But for some reason, this winter market, this odd thought that had found its way into his musing on the apocalyptic scenes around him, was different. It wasn't a relic of the old world that he knew merely by word association or general knowledge. No. It? Bloody hell, he thought. It was an actual memory. He looked around as he tried to process this, saw cranks of various stages shambling about the streets and parking lots and cluttered yards. He could only assume these people were infected, every one of them, no matter their actions or tendencies. Otherwise, why would they be out here, out in the open like this? Some had the awareness and normal flow of movement that he still did, early on in that infection, their minds still mostly whole. A family huddled together upon wilting grass, eating scavenged food, the mom holding a shotgun for protection. A woman leaned against a cement wall, her arms folded, crying. Her eyes revealed the despair of her circumstances, but not madness, not yet. Small clusters of people talked in hushed whispers, observing the chaos around them, probably trying to come up with plans for a life that no longer had plans anyone might desire. Others in the area were seemingly in between the first and last stages, acting erratic and angry, uncertain, sad. He watched a man march across an intersection with his young daughter in tow, holding her hand, looking for all the world as if they might be going to a park or to the store for candy. But right in the middle of the street, he stopped, dropped the girl's hand, looked at her like a stranger, then wailed and wept like a child himself. Newt saw a woman eating a banana. Where had she gotten a buggin' banana? Who stopped midway through, tossed it on the ground, then started stomping it with both feet as if she'd found a rat nibbling at her baby in a knocked-over pram. And then there were, of course, those who had, without a doubt, traveled well past the gone, that line in the sand that divided humans from animals, people from beasts. A girl, who couldn't have been older than 15 or 16, lay flat on the ground in the middle of the nearest road, babbling incoherently, chewing on her fingers hard enough that blood dripped back down onto her face. She giggled every time it did so. Not far from her, a man crouched over a chunk of what looked like raw chicken, pale and pink. He didn't eat it, not yet, but his eyes darted left and right and up and down, empty of sanity, ready to attack any fool who dared try to take his meat away. Farther down that same street, a few cranks were fighting each other like a pack of wolves, biting and clawing and tearing as if they had been dropped in a gladiator's coliseum, and only one would be allowed to walk away alive. Newt lowered his eyes, sank onto the pavement. He slipped the backpack from his shoulders and cradled it in his arms, felt the hard edge of the launcher he'd stolen from Jorge's weapons stash on the berg. Newt didn't know how long the energy-dependent electric-firing projectile device would last, but he figured it couldn't hurt to have it. The knife resided in the pocket of his jeans, folded up, a pretty sturdy one, if it ever came to hand-to-hand battle. But that was the thing. Like he'd thought earlier, everything he saw around him had become the new normal of sorts, and for the life of him he couldn't figure out why he wasn't terrified. He felt no fear, no apprehension, no stress, no innate desire to run, run, run. How many times had he come across cranks since escaping the maze? How many times had he almost soiled his pants from sheer terror? Maybe it was the fact that he was now one of them, quickly descending to their level of madness, that stayed his fear. Or maybe it was the madness itself, destroying his most human of instincts. And what of that whole winter market thing? Was the flare finally releasing him from the hold of the swipe he'd been subjected to by Wicked? Could that perhaps be the ticket to his final journey past the Gone? He already felt the most acute and abject despair he'd ever felt in his life, abandoning his friends forever. If memories of his life before, of his family, began to invade him without mercy, he didn't know how he could possibly take it. The rumbling sound of engines finally, mercifully, ripped him from these increasingly depressing thoughts. Three trucks had appeared around the corner of a street that led away from the city, although calling them trucks was like calling a tiger a cat. The things were massive, 40 or 50 feet long and half that in height and width, heavily armored, windows tinted black with steel bars reinforcing them against attacks. The tires alone were taller than Newt himself, and he could only stare, wondering in awe what he might be about to witness firsthand. A horn sounded from all three vehicles at once, a thunderous noise that made his eardrums rattle in their cages. It was the sound he'd heard earlier from inside the burg. Some of the surrounding cranks ran at the sight of the monsters on wheels, still smart enough to know that danger had arrived from the horizon. But most of them were oblivious, looking on much as Newt did, as curious as a newborn baby seeing lights and hearing voices for the first time. He had the advantage of distance and plenty of hordes between him and the new arrivals. Feeling safe in the most unsafe of places, Newt watched things unfold, though he did unzip his backpack and place one hand on the cool metal surface of the stolen launcher. The trucks came to a stop, the shattering noise of their horns ceasing like a shattered echo. Men and women piled out of the cabins, dressed to the hilt in black and gray, some with red shirts pulled over their torso, chests armored, heads covered with helmets as shiny as dark glass, all of them holding long-shafted weapons that made Newt's launcher look like a toy gun. At least a dozen of these soldiers began firing indiscriminately, their aim fastened on anyone who moved. Newt didn't know a single thing about the weapons they used, but flashes of light shot from their barrels with a noise that reminded him of Fry Pan, when he'd bang a heavy stick against a warped piece of metal they'd found somewhere in the nether parts of the glade. To tell people his latest and greatest meal was ready to be devoured. It made a vibrating whomp sound that made his very bones tremble. They weren't killing the cranks, just stunning them, temporarily causing paralysis. Many of them still shouted or wailed after they'd fallen to the ground, and continued to do so as the soldiers dragged them with the least amount of tenderness possible toward the huge doors at the back of the trucks. Someone had opened them while Newt observed the onslaught, and beyond those doors was a cavernous holding cell for the captives. The soldiers must have eaten a lot of meat and drank a lot of milk, because they picked up the limp bodies of the cranks and tossed them inside the darkness as if they were no more than small bales of hay.
"What the hell are you doing?"
A voice, a tight strum of words, came from right behind Newt's ear, and he yelped so loud that he just knew the soldiers would stop everything they were doing and charge after him. He spun around to see a woman crouched next to him, shielded by the fallen pole, a small child in her arms, a boy, maybe 3 years old. Newt's heart had jolted at her voice, the first time he'd been startled since coming outside, despite all the horrors developing around him. He couldn't find words to respond.
"You need to run," she said. "They're doing a full sweep of the whole damn place today. You been asleep or what?"
Newt shook his head, wondering why this lady bothered with him if she felt it so important to get out of there. He searched for something to say and found it in the haze that filled his mind lately.
"Where are they taking them?" "I think I saw a place from the bar. I mean, I've heard of a place where they keep cranks, where cranks live. Is that it?"
She shouted to be heard over the commotion.
"Maybe. Probably. They call it the Crank Palace."
The lady had dark hair, dark skin, dark eyes. She looked as rough as Newt felt, but at least those eyes had sanity with a dash of kindness thrown in. The little boy was as scared as any human Newt had ever seen, eyes cinched tight and his arms wrapped around his mum's neck like twisted bars of steel.
"Apparently there are people who are immune to the flare."
Newt bristled at that word, immune, bristled hard, but kept silent as she went on.
"People who are kind enough or stupid enough or just paid a crap ton money enough to kind of take care of them at the palace until they're, you know, untake-careable anymore. Although I heard the place is getting full and they might be giving up on that whole idea. Wouldn't surprise me one damn bit if this roundup ends at the flare pits."
She said the last two words as if it were something anyone with half a brain knew all about, an image that seemed appropriate for their new world.
"Flare pits?"
he asked.
"What do you think the constant smoke on the east side of the city is?"
Her response said it all, though Newt hadn't noticed such a thing.
"Now, are you coming with us or not?" "I'm coming with you," he said, each word popping from his mouth without any consideration. "Good. The rest of my family is dead, and I could use the help."
Even through the shock of her words, he recognized the self-serving motive in coming to him. Otherwise, he would have suspected a trap. He started to ask a question. He didn't know exactly what yet, something about who she was and where they were going, but she'd already turned around and sprinted in a direction away from where the soldiers were still tossing lifeless but living bodies into the hold of the trucks. The wails and cries of anguish were like a field of dying children. Newt threw his backpack onto his shoulders, cinched the straps, felt the dig of the launcher against his spine, then took off after this new friend of his, and the little one clutched to her chest. Chapter 3. The woman had more energy than a runner from the maze, and those guys ran the corridors, blades, and slot canyons of that beast all day long, day in and day out. Newt had gotten out of shape at some point, sucking air until it felt like someone had stolen all the oxygen from Denver with a magical net. His buggin' limp didn't help matters. They'd gone at least a mile before he finally found out her name.
"Keisha,"
she said as they stopped for a breath inside an old wreck of a neighborhood right under the skeletal, long-dead branches of a maple tree, almost no other person in sight. Newt felt a little better when she doubled over, chest heaving, to put the toddler down so she could rest. Human, after all.
"My kid's name is Dante. You might have noticed he doesn't talk a whole lot. Well, that's just the way it is. Not a thing I can do about it, is there? And yes, we named him that because of the epic poem."
"What epic poem?" Newt wanted to ask. He had no idea what she was talking about, though he had a sense of memory knocking on his brain from the other side of a hidden door. Maybe he'd known before the swipe. He tried not to wonder what might be wrong with her kid that he didn't speak. Traumatized? Impaired somehow? Maybe just shy?
He wanted to know their stories, but wasn't sure he had the right. "The poem about the 9 circles of hell?" she prodded, mistaking his internal thoughts and musings. "Didn't read too many books in your neck of the woods growing up, huh? Shame, you missed out big time on that one. It's a doozy." Newt was certain he'd read books, as certain as he knew he'd eaten food and guzzled water before they'd taken his memory. But he didn't remember any of the stories, and the thought filled him with a heavy sadness. "Why did you name your kid after hell?" he asked, really just trying to lighten the mood. Keisha plopped onto her butt and gave little Dante a kiss. Newt had expected the boy to be a brat, cry his lungs out in a place like this. But so far he hadn't made a peep. "We didn't name him after hell, you moron," Keisha responded, somehow saying it kindly. "We named him after the guy who defined hell, who embraced it and made it his own." Newt nodded, lips pursed, trying to show he'd been impressed without having to lie and say it out loud. "Corny, I know," Keisha replied after seeing his expression. "We might have been drunk." Newt knelt next to them, still trying to take in deep breaths without making it too obvious that he needed it so desperately. "Sounds about right. Drunk and corny's the way to go these days." He reached out and gently pinched Dante's cheek, tried to give the kid a smile. To his astonishment, the boy smiled back, showing a mouthful of tiny teeth that gleamed in the afternoon light. "Ah, he likes you," Keisha said. "Ain't that the cutest thing? Congrats, you're his new papa." Newt had been squatting, but that comment made him fall backward onto his rear end. Keisha laughed, a sound as good as birdsong. "Relax, dumbass. You don't look like dad material, and it was just a joke. Doesn't matter. We'll all be Looney Tunes crazy in a month anyway." Newt smiled, hoping it didn't look as forced as it felt. Leaves scattered across the pavement of the street as a breeze picked up, making the branches above them go clackety-clack as they banged against each other. He could hear voices and shouts in the distance, seeming to ride on that breeze, but not close enough to panic. They were safe enough for a few minutes, anyway. He got up his nerve and asked the question that had been on his mind. "You said your family was dead. What did you mean? Did you lose a lot of people?" "That I did, my fine-haired friend." Keisha had a unique way of saying light-hearted things very sadly. "My hubby, 2 sisters, a brother, my old man, uncles, aunts, cousins, and my other... Here she lost any pretense that the world was still a place where you called people your fine-haired friend. Her face collapsed into despair, head literally dropping toward the ground along with it, and tears dropped from her eyes onto the cracked pavement of the sidewalk. Though silent, her shoulders shook with a hitched sob. "You don't have to say," Newt said. It was as obvious as the sun being hot and the moon being white. She'd lost one of her children. Poor Dante had not been an only child. I'm really sorry I asked. I'm such a turd," he chided himself. He'd literally known this woman for all of an hour at most. She sniffed hard, then brought her head back up to look at him, wiping away the tears that had managed to stick to her cheeks. "No, it's okay." She said these words in a distant monotone, somehow wistful and haunted at once. "Just do me a favor. Don't ever ask me, never, ever, how I lost them all. No matter how long we survive or if I know you one day or one month, never ask. Please." Her eyes, glistening wet, finally met his. the saddest eyes he'd seen since Chuck gave him one last look right outside the maze.
"Yeah, I promise," he said. "I swear. We don't need to talk about that stuff. I shouldn't have started it."
Keisha shook her head.
"No, stop being a worrywart. Just as long as you don't ask me, you know, we'll be good."
Newt nodded, selfishly wishing he could vanish into thin air and end this awkward, horrible conversation. He gazed down at Dante, who was sitting still and quiet, looking at his mom as if he wondered what was wrong with her. Maybe he wasn't old enough to remember all the bad things that had happened to those who shared his blood.
"What's your plan, anyway?"
Keisha asked after a minute or so of silence.
"You don't have to tell me your story or anything. Fair's fair. But what were you doing lying there like a spent popsicle stick, just waiting for those a-holes to come get you?"
"I..." Newt had absolutely no idea what to say.
"I found out recently that I got the bloody flare, and I couldn't stand the thought of my friends seeing me degenerate into a raving lunatic, or take the chance that I might hurt them. So I left. Didn't even say goodbye. Well, I left a note telling them I was gonna go live with the infected, that crank palace, I guess, the one you told me about. Oh, and I left another note asking my best friend to kill me if he ever saw me going completely bonkers, and..."
He cut off when he realized she was staring at him with giant eyes, no trace of tears left to shine against the fading sunlight.
"Too much?" he asked.
She gave a slow nod.
"Too much. I don't even know where to begin. Do I need to be worried here? You're not going to try to eat my arm, are you? Or my kid?"
She coughed out a fake laugh that made him cringe.
"Sorry. I don't know. I'm not in a good way, I guess."
"Yeah, none of us are.
But what the hell? So many questions. I mean, first off, your friends didn't catch the flare from you? What, did you escape from inside Denver or something?"
He shook his head.
"No, no. It's a long story."
He wasn't ready to tell anyone anything about all the crap he'd been through, and that he'd cruelly been thrown in with a bunch of people who were immune to the virus. What would be the point? He and all these people would be dead or past the gone soon enough.
"Okay,"
Keisha said slowly, acting now as if she humored the tall tales of a child. She must have had plenty of practice with such a thing.
"Then let's fish another fry..."
"Fish another what?"
Her face scowled in rebuke.
"You're going to have to get used to my humor, young man."
He almost protested again. She couldn't be more than 10 years older than him. But he fell silent when her scowl deepened even further.
"Now listen to me, and listen to me well. What in the hell and what on God's green earth were you going on about when you said you want to go live with the infected, live at the crank palace?
I know we're heading toward crazy now, but we don't seem too ready to get off the train just yet. Or at least I thought so anyway. But if you're going to sit here and yap about wanting to go to that place, then you were crazy long before you got the flare. Don't come at me again with something so stupid." She probably would have kept on going, but now it was her turn to stutter to a stop when she saw his wide eyes.
"What?"
she asked.
"You don't believe me?"
Newt stumbled through a few words of nonsense before he got out anything coherent.
"Mainly, I just wanted to leave my friends behind before I went off the rails. But maybe it's the best place to go. Be with the other sorry saps who are infected. For one thing, maybe they have food and shelter there. Everybody's in the same boat."
Newt didn't believe a single word coming out of his own mouth.
"What else am I going to do? Go settle on a farm and raise cattle for the jerks in Denver?"
"Raise cattle for the..."
Keisha's words trailed into silence as she shook her head in wonder at the apparent stupidity of his full statement.
Look, I'm just going to have to treat you like my third child, okay? Deal? I don't have time for this nonsense talk. Now let's get up and go. The sweeps will probably go all night till they can't find another soul to toss into those trucks. They don't like dirty rats like us getting too close to their precious city.
She stood up, helped little Dante stand as well, holding him by the hand. Newt got to his feet, neither in the mood nor having any basis to argue with her anyway. Didn't matter. He was away from Tommy and the others, and that had been the main goal all along. Who cared what happened to him now? Keisha pointed in the direction of the sun, now sinking with earnest toward the horizon, which was hidden by houses and trees and distant mountains in the gaps.
From what I hear, we just have to make it a few more miles and we can probably find a house to sleep in. Hopefully some food. Most of the crazies end up congregating like ants around the city, so we should be safer the farther out we...
An electronic charging sound cut her off, a sound way too similar to the charge of a launcher, which filled Newt with instant dread. He spun around to see three red-shirted soldiers standing there, all of them pointing the barrels of those unwieldy weapons at Newt and his new friend. The blue glow of the guns was bright, even in the light of day.
"I need those hands up in the air,"
one of the soldiers said, the voice coming through a speaker in the helmet, a woman by the sound of it.
"You look like decent people, but we need to at least test you and see if..."
"Don't bother," Keisha said. "We've got the damn flare, and you know it. Just let us go. Please? I've got a kid, for heaven's sake. We promise we'll just keep walking the other direction, won't bother a soul. We'll never come near the city again. Cross my heart, hope to die, stick a needle in my eye."
"You know we can't do that," the woman replied. "You came too close and you should know better. We want these streets empty."
Keisha made some kind of angry noise that Newt had never heard expelled from a human before, not even a crank. Something from deep within her chest, like a growl.
"Didn't you hear what I just said? We're going to keep walking away from the city. You'll never see us again." "If that's the case, then you won't mind us giving you a lift, will you?"
The soldier hefted her weapon to make a point, stepped closer, the barrel now aiming squarely at Keisha's head.
"You know, this thing will knock you out no matter where it strikes, but shots to the head are especially bad. You'll be puking and seeing double for a week. Now come along nice and easy, got it?"
Keisha nodded.
"Oh, I got it."
The next 2 seconds happened so quickly and yet so slowly that Newt felt as if he'd been transplanted to a dream where nothing made sense. Keisha had pulled out an old-school revolver from seemingly nowhere, as though it had materialized through a magic spell. Even as her arm jerked up, even as it let out the pop-pop of 2 shots, the soldier who'd been talking ignited her weapon, firing that strange flash of lightning along with its thwack of thumped air, an almost silent thunderbolt that was felt more than heard. Blue energy arced across Keisha's face, and she screamed a bloody shriek of murder and pain. Her body collapsed to the ground, arms and legs shaking with spasms. Little Dante was less than a foot from her, and for the first time since they'd met, he began to wail like the child that he was. The combined sounds of their anguish, mother and son, was enough to ignite a cauldron of rage inside Newt, coursing through his veins like flooded pipes. He yelled, a primal animal yell, and ran for the closest soldier, who stood there as if stunned, doing nothing, his weapon pointed at the pavement. The woman who'd shot Keisha was down on both knees, nursing a wound to her stomach. The third soldier lay flat on the ground, a crimson pool of blood widening beneath his or her bullet-shattered helmet.
Newt dove at the only one standing, the one who seemed at a complete loss. Newt's shoulder crashed into the person's chest, even as the man, at least Newt thought he was a man, shouted a muffled cry for help into whatever communication system the soldiers used. Newt's arms wrapped around him, the momentum of his dive catapulting both of them to the ground in a violent tackle, the other man's weight cushioning the fall. On some level, Newt knew he was being reckless, that an irrational rage had consumed him, that he was being unstable. But that didn't stop him from screaming again, from sitting back on the soldier's stomach, from reaching forward to grab the man's helmet with both hands and lift it, slam it back into the ground. He lifted it again, slammed it again. This time he heard a crack and a whimpering groan of pain that faded like a last breath. The soldier's entire body went still. Newt's breaths were pouring into his chest like a bellows, his chest heaving so much that he almost fainted, almost swooned off the man. But then another kick of adrenaline burst through him. He felt invincible, elated, hysterically euphoric. While still tethered to reality enough to know that the virus was changing him more and more each day, this would be his life soon, seeking the thrill and feast of enacted rage. But then something hit him in the back of the head, and his brief stint as a warrior ended with him flopping to the ground like a collapsed balloon. He didn't quite fade from the day around him, could just see Keisha lying on the ground with Dante beside her, panicked and bawling. But a few seconds later, Newt vomited all over himself. Why the bloody hell had he ever left that burg? Chapter 4. The next hour was a lifetime of headaches, nausea, and strange movements. Newt stayed awake for all of it. The hyper-enthusiasm he'd experienced for all of 2 minutes had completely vanished. Spent. He had no energy whatsoever, in fact, didn't lift a finger to defend himself as reinforcement soldiers did whatever they wanted with him. At least they didn't separate him from Keisha and Dante. He couldn't bear the thought of losing the small connection he had with those two after so short a time. A truck rumbled up, much smaller than the behemoths they'd seen earlier by the massive walls of Denver. 2 people picked him off the ground, with not the least amount of gentility, and threw him into the back of the open bed of the vehicle. He expected to land on a pile of writhing bodies, 12 cranks fighting and clawing and trying to get out. Instead, he landed on the hard steel of the truck bed and lost his breath for a moment. Keisha came next, still no sign of voluntary movement in her limbs. But her eyes. Her eyes were lit with awareness and understanding, the purest panic Newt could imagine. But that eased a bit when Dante was plopped right next to her, offered a little more care than they'd been given. The kid still cried, but it had almost become a constant, a background noise, like the strong flow of a rapid, rocky river nearby. He laid his head down on his mum's shoulder and wrapped his tiny arms around her neck. Tears leaked from Keisha's eyes. "She's okay," Newt murmured, though he doubted the kid heard or understood. "She's just... she'll be okay soon." Every word he uttered rang in his head like a broken bell. A soldier jumped into the back of the truck with them, squatted with his back to the window of the cabin. He held something that looked more like a machine gun than an energy weapon, and Newt figured they had less than 1 chance left for misbehaving. The next time would be rewarded with a few bullets in the brain to end things. The truck roared its engine, then set off from the quiet neighborhood, probably quiet because the sweep-up of cranks had already been through that area. Newt had the distant thought that spying eyes might have reported them from within the windows of one of those seemingly innocent homes, frightened eyes that spied from the darkness, from behind torn curtains and broken glass. Surprised at himself, Newt found that he didn't care.
Maybe the virus had eaten that part of his brain first, the part that worried and agonized over what lay in his immediate future. It just didn't matter. Madness awaited him at the end of the track, and there was no slowing that train. He couldn't bring himself to care how bumpy the ride might be. Newt relaxed onto his back and looked up at the sky as they drove. Blue and white, more clouds than not, the kind with no shape or substance, just scratched across the azure heavens by a painter with no discipline. Some people said the sky never had quite the same color once the catastrophic sun flares struck a couple of decades earlier. Newt would never know, could never know. What he saw seemed natural enough, and despite his sudden indifference to the world, it gave him a small squeeze of comfort that saddened him a little. Saddened that he'd never have a chance to live a full and meaningful life under the skies above. The truck jostled to a stop sometime later. How long, Newt didn't really know. Maybe a half hour. They had parked between two platforms of cement, both seeming to hover just a few feet above the lip of the truck bed, bordered by steel railings. Several people stood up there to each side, dressed in bulky, overbearing protective gear that looked like something you'd see at Wicked on a bad day. Newt quickly glanced at Keisha, who had her back to him, her arms wrapped around her son. She might have been asleep. He saw her back rise and fall with even breaths. He sighed in relief. Glancing skyward at the strangers staring down, he shifted his elbows to prop himself up. He opened his mouth to say something, ask something, but a fire hose appeared at one of the railings, its nozzle pointing in his direction. It was enough to silence him. Water, he hoped it was water, abruptly flushed out of the hose in a torrid stream, wetly smacking into him so hard that he slammed against the truck bed, yelping at the slicing, biting cold of the onslaught. The force of it was painful enough, but the frigidity made it feel acidic, stinging like a million slaps against his skin. He tried to scream against it, but water filled his mouth and set him off to choking and coughing instead. The person above directed the stream at Keisha and Dante, then, just as he thought he might drown. Keisha seemed completely back to normal because she squirmed and kicked and shielded Dante as best she could. The hose set upon Newt again, then back to Keisha, then back to Newt. This torture lasted another minute or two before some angel turned it off. Newt and Keisha were left to sputter and spit and catch their breath, all amidst the backdrop of Dante's high-pitched screams.
"What the hell was that for?"
Keisha yelled, sounding like someone who'd just swam 50 feet underwater and finally came up for air. A mechanized voice responded, filtered by the hazard suit.
"That's the best we can do out here to disinfect. Sorry. We don't have a hell of a lot of choices anymore. Hope the kid's okay."
With that compassion-dripping statement, he gave a wave of the hand. The truck jolted and the engine squawked, and they were off again. They picked up speed. With their wet clothes, it felt as if the temperature had dropped 30 degrees. Keisha fully grasped her maternal role and pulled Newt close to her, cradling both him and her son. Dante had gone silent, perhaps shivering too violently to cry. Newt had no complaints, snuggling into Keisha's grasp for as much warmth as possible. He had flashes of a woman in his mind, shadows made of light, no features, more a presence than anything. His mind was loosening. He knew that now. The irony of it so thick it seemed possible to chop at it with an axe. He would remember his mom soon, remember her fully, just in time to forget her in the madness of the flare. A few minutes later, they drove through the opened doors of a gate, providing entrance past a huge wall of wooden planks, a sign on one of the doors that flashed by too quickly for Newt to read the words printed there. Several people stood around, scratches and bruises on their faces, all of them holding launchers. Not a one looked too thrilled to have visitors. Then there were trees, half of them dead, half of them green and bright and hale. The world was coming back to life, slowly but surely, especially in these higher elevations. The truck came to a stop again. Barely enough time had passed for Newt's skin to dry, much less his hair or clothes. Both doors of the vehicle opened and closed, and something told Newt their journey was over, that they might never be in another car or truck for the rest of whatever remained of their lives.
"Are you going to kill us?"
Keisha asked the empty air above them in a shaky voice, the first time Newt had seen her show genuine fear.
"Please, don't hurt my children."
Children. Was it her fleeing mind, imagining that Newt was her daughter, come back from the dead? Or did awareness still cling to her strongly enough to hope for more leniency granted a mother and her kids? Before anyone bothered to answer, the three of them sat up, letting go of their temporary cuddle of warmth. Two soldiers stood at the tailgate of the truck, the gate still closed. They were helmeted, their faces nothing but shiny black glass, as soulless as robots. That now familiar, muffled, slightly mechanized voice came from one of them, a low growl that sounded almost like static.
"You're lucky to be alive," it said, "especially after killing my friend. So if you complain, I'll beat the living hell out of you. I swear it on all your dead relatives."
"Wow," Keisha said.
"Harsh. Wake up on the wrong side of the bed this morning?"
Newt was amazed that she had the guts to make even the slightest of jokes. The soldier who'd spoken gripped the upper edge of the tailgate with gloved fists, the leather creaking as he squeezed.
"Say another word. Just one more word. You think this would be the first time we've accidentally broken an order?" "She would be ashamed for that kid if his mama died because she wasn't cooperative."
To Newt's immeasurable relief, Keisha didn't respond. She looked at Dante, finding all the strength she needed in his eyes, in his life.
"Just get out of the truck," the other soldier piped in. "Now! You're going to spend the rest of your life in this hellhole, so you might as well make yourselves at home."
She pulled on a latch and the tailgate flopped down with a heavy metallic crack. Newt had a sudden and almost overwhelming rush of panic, the uncertainty of his life now, all at once, taking on meaning again. He moved to deflect it, scooted himself forward until he could jump down from the truck bed onto the ground, a mishmash of dirt and weeds. A quick look around showed a lot of trees and dozens of tiny cabins and tents, as haphazard as the early days of the glade. Newt felt a longing for his friends and old days past, as hard as those old days were. Keisha handed Dante to Newt, then jumped down and landed right next to him. It was the first time Newt had held the child, maybe the first time he'd ever held someone so young. To his surprise, the kid didn't cry, probably too enticed by his new surroundings, probably still feeling a false sense of elation from the absence of a raging fire hose. Even Newt felt that. It was fresh on his mind and oddly made everything in the world seem a little brighter because he didn't have a rushing explosion of ice-cold water battering his face. One of the soldiers closed the tailgate, secured the latch. Then they headed for the doors of the truck without saying anything, opened them, readied to step up and onto the seats.
"Wait," Newt said, handing Dante back to his mum. "What are we supposed to do?"
The soldier on the passenger side ignored them, got in, slammed the door. The driver paused with a foot on the instep, but didn't turn around to face them when she answered.
"Like we said, just be glad you're alive. Hardly anyone's being sent here anymore. Almost full. Most cranks are just, you know, taken care of."
The Crank Palace. A sicker version of Newt would have laughed.
He'd ended up here after all, even after Keisha's less than subtle declaration that it had been the dumbest idea ever.
But why?
Keisha asked, gently swaying with Dante in her arms.
If you're offing most of the infected, then why not us, after what we did?
There was no apology in her voice. None at all.
Are you complaining?
The soldier countered.
I'd be happy to take you to the flare pits if that's what your heart desires. It's what you deserve.
Newt quickly spoke up.
No, no, thank you. We're fine.
He gently grabbed Keisha's arm, tried to pull her away from the truck. He wanted nothing to do with these people ever again. But she resisted, seemed intent on getting them killed or burned in the pits.
Why? She asked. What are you not telling us?
Even though they couldn't see the soldier's face, every inch of her armored body screamed out what her facial expressions couldn't. Frustration, annoyance, anger. But then she relaxed, all of her muscles slackening at once, her foot dropping back to the ground. She turned toward them and spoke with that mechanized voice, void of feeling.
It's him, she pointed at Newt. They know who he is, and she wants to keep track of him. You and your kid are just lucky you made a new friend. Otherwise, you would have been dead long before you made it to the pits. Now, goodbye and have a wonderful life. Short and sweet, as they say.
With that, she jumped in the truck and drove off, the back tires spitting up rocks and dirt.
Who was she talking about?
Keisha asked.
Who is she?
Newt only shook his head, staring at the truck as it grew smaller with distance. Finally, it turned a corner around some trees and was gone. He looked at the ground.
Later,
was the only word that came out.
She.
He couldn't bring himself to say her name. Chapter 5. Newt didn't grasp their surroundings until after the truck had left, as if his senses didn't fully kick in until they knew they'd been freed from the soldiers and their potential for harm. Without saying much at all, with Dante, asleep now, in her arms, Keisha and he walked around and took stock of the area in which they'd been dumped. It was a dry, dusty place, although the trees provided enough shade and fallen leaves to dampen the effect. Almost everywhere you looked, signs of habitation filled the spaces and gaps. Small, hastily built cabins, some without windows, some with broken windows. Tents of all sizes that appeared to have been erected weeks or months ago, with old couches or chairs plopped next to their entrance flaps. Lines, draped with towels and clothing left to dry, hung from the trees above them. Old shoes and bags of trash and small tables scattered hither and thither. Newt once again flashed back to the early days of the maze, could almost picture the towering stone walls looming somewhere just out of sight. Several habitations looked less occupied than others, some having been obviously abandoned or never used. Newt took a turn holding Dante. The kid was absolutely zonked after all that adventure and mayhem, and the three of them found a small cabin nestled between two large oak trees. They stood inside of it, taking a tour that lasted about 20 seconds. It was one room, no kitchen, no bathroom, completely empty of possessions or furniture. The lone window, facing east, based on the position of the setting sun, had once held glass. Now it held three nasty-looking shards the size of Newt's thumb.
It's perfect, Keisha pronounced, voice dripping with sarcasm. And we'll have a nice draft through that busted window. I can't think of anything else I've ever wanted in a home.
Newt realized he was patting Dante's back as if he were a baby.
A couch would be nice. Maybe some food.
The whole situation was absurd, and they both knew it. Here they were, acting like a nice little family, settling down in their new home. Maybe a neighbor would drop by soon with a plate of biscuits and a bloody teapot. I'm gonna go check things out, Newt said, not even sure what he meant until the words came out. But he couldn't just stand there anymore. No matter how nice it seemed, these people weren't his family, and he'd be a fool to throw his lot in with them completely. At least, not yet. He needed to explore, see what this crank palace was all about. Keisha gave him a hard glare.
Don't even think about it.
What?
Abandoning us. You're the only friend we've got in this world, and I think you need us as badly as we need you. We literally have crazy people for neighbors. You saw all the lived-in places before we found this one.
I don't know if they're at a party or what, but they'll be back, probably carrying torches and pitchforks. Her words touched him, he had to admit. But he also felt uneasy, fidgety, like something wasn't quite right. He had an inexplicable and sudden urge to yell at her, to tell her to leave him alone, that he could do whatever he wanted, like a child. Thankfully, he resisted.
I just want to know what's out there, he said, trying to keep the defensiveness out of his voice. Sun's almost down, but I'll be quick about it. For one thing, we need something to eat. When's the last time Dante had any food?
Keisha let out a monstrous sigh of frustration and stepped over to a wall, then turned around, put her back to the cheap wood, and slid to the floor. She gently dropped Dante into her lap, where he continued to sleep like he planned to do it straight through the end of days.
Please, wait until morning, Keisha said, as quiet as he'd heard her speak yet. I can't. Life is hard enough, Newt. I can't bear the thought of being here alone in the dark, terrified out of my wits at what may come walking by, knocking on our door, peeking through our broken window.